My name is Tosh Jordan. I've been on staff here for quite a while. This session is called A Gay Rap, or something like that, and I don't have a formal presentation at all. Couple of opening remarks. A little over a year ago, I decided that it was time to come out to the world at large. Came out to my parents and my close friends a couple years before that. And coming out here for me in the community was not a conscious decision. It just sort of happened at a forum a little over a year ago. And a friend of mine, who is a lesbian, gave the opening remarks at the forum. And as people started responding to her and asking questions and making comments, I found myself needing to speak out and needing to say some things that I didn't feel were being said. And so I did that, and after I had said something, after I had addressed a gentleman who had said something to Molly, I realized that I hadn't done that before. So I felt eyes on me from people that I had been living and working with. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, I guess I just did something important. Since that time, I've had the opportunity to do a number of sessions with various people, with Molly over the winter, with Ray McKeever, who was here last winter, with his family, with Elmer, and with we did a couple of other sessions with various people. One session that Molly and I did in January of 85 was with the St. Olaf interim group, who was here for the month of January. And we decided that it would be nice to have a chance to share some things with that group before they left. We didn't have any formal plans in mind. We just sort of announced, well, Molly and I are going to be sitting in Koinonia at 4 o'clock on Saturday, just having a conversation. If anybody wants to come sit in and ask questions and talk, that would be fine. We were expecting maybe 6, 10, 12 people. And we walked in at 5 to 4, and there were about 40 people here. So I thought about that. I've been thinking about that lately, and I thought it might be a good format to try again. Anytime the subject of homosexuality comes up, it's very easy for the discussion to become us talking about them. That's always bothered me a little bit, because as a gay man, I'm familiar enough with the literature and familiar enough with the people I know to know that as gay and lesbian people, we are pretty much everywhere, and we look pretty much like everybody else, and we dress and talk and act pretty much like everybody else. And so at any given forum or lecture on homosexuality, there are bound to be at least a couple gay or lesbian people there. So I hope by doing this kind of thing that people will be comfortable enough to speak out if they want to, or comfortable enough to ask questions. I'll try not to be embarrassed, and I hope you'll not be embarrassed, and we can just kind of sit and talk for a while. Growing up gay in our culture is a pretty difficult thing. Seems like we all go through a period of denying our sexuality, denying who we find ourselves to be, spend some time often trying to integrate our sexuality and our spirituality in whatever way. Often that involves making a choice of either affirming our sexuality or affirming our spirituality, and it usually, or often, takes a period of time to integrate those two into a meaningful whole where we can be both sexual and spiritual beings in touch with ourselves and with the world and with God in a more honest way. For me, the choice was first to go with the church, to go with what I had been taught, to go with what I had read, what I had heard, which was about 99%, I would say, of the opinion that gay sexuality, that homosexuality is not good, that it is not a created thing, that it is not worthy of being affirmed, that homosexual relationships had very little in common with heterosexual relationships of a similar nature, and that homosexuality was something that we needed to be cured of or repent of. There were a couple of really affirming sessions very soon after I got here in 82, given by Wally Stewart, who is the president of Pacific Lutheran Theological Seminary in Berkeley. And he said some things that were very liberating to me, that sexuality is a gift from God, that gay and lesbian people have every right to be included in the ministries of the church, in Christianity, and that it was not a disease, it was not inherently sinful or evil. And I found that almost shocking at first. And I remember coming out of one of his sessions, feeling almost high, like, oh wow, the universe is a nice place to be again. So from that point, you know, that was really a starting point for me in my spiritual sexual journey toward integration. Since that time, I've done a fair amount of reading and talking with people and taking a look at scripture very closely, taking a look at historical perspectives that the church has had on homosexuality. And I'm at a place right now where I feel very comfortable in my belief that, as Wally Stewart said in his sessions, that homosexuality does indeed have a legitimate place in the Christian faith, and that it has a legitimate place in life, in our culture, in all cultures. So maybe we can just start from there. I'm open to answering theological and scriptural and scientific and social and all kinds of questions as far as I'm able. So please feel free to say what you want to say and ask what you want to ask, and we'll work through it as best we can. You don't all have to speak at once or raise your hands or anything like that.
Yeah? This is, you didn't include the word personal, and therefore you choose not to answer. How was it to tell your folks?
It was difficult. I was not very strong and sure then. That was in October of 82. I had planned a special trip out of the village to go down to their house in Portland and talk to them. And that was a difficult thing. We sat down one night at the kitchen table, as we often do, and I just kind of said, you know, there's something that I really want to tell you. And I told them, and we talked theology for quite a while. My father is a Lutheran pastor and has a second degree in theology, and so we talked scripture quite a bit. Toward the end, my mother cried, and my father got angry, and I got upset, and things kind of degenerated. Since that time, well, part of our discussion was that I am still their son. They are still my parents. We don't see eye to eye on this issue at all. In the ensuing period of time, my mother has approached me with questions a couple times. She's been up here to the village a few times while I've been here, and has talked to me a little bit about it, asked questions. My father has not, and that's still a fairly difficult thing that I'm trying to deal with. I'm at a place right now where I realized that that is one area of my life, a large area of my life, that I'm not, at this point, able to share with them freely. I don't know how they would respond if I just started sharing with them on the level that I share with other people about who I am and who I'm with and what I'm doing and day-to-day kinds of things that are important to me. I don't expect that they would be happy to hear about it. I don't know how they would react if I took a boyfriend home to meet them. I don't expect it would be very pleasant at first. And that's sad. I've been very fortunate in coming out to friends and acquaintances, and that there have been very few overtly negative responses to me. There have been friends whom I have held very close who have just kind of drifted away since I came out to them. The most stunning reaction I got, I was on a tour, a wine tasting tour of California with a woman I went to high school with about a year and a half ago, or a little more than that. And I finally got up the nerve one night in Monterey to sit down with her and tell her, and she threw up. That was kind of exciting. Generally, people have been very supportive and very, very affirming. I have felt very definitely oppressed in a few situations. Most often, I think what people tend to do with homosexuality, if they're not comfortable with it or not ready to deal with it, is simply to pretend that it does not exist. And so that, you know, that's a very severe oppression also, but it's a very different feel. Not that I don't exist, but that my sexuality does not exist, that gay and lesbian people as a whole don't exist. And not being included, I think, is the most common form of oppression that gay and lesbian people face. We still, as a group, face overt oppression, being denied housing, being fired from jobs. Living in the closet, that is not being open and affirming about one's homosexuality, is a very draining experience. It takes so much energy. You can't be free and open with people when you're talking to them. You have to think through everything you want to say before you say it and edit it. You do that with your family, with your friends, with people you don't even know. And that kind of attitude towards one's own sexuality is a very alienating thing from other people, from God, from yourself. Coming out alienates in another kind of way sometimes. In friendships, if people know that you're gay and they're not comfortable with that, they probably won't get to know you and talk with you and stuff. I realized something a few months ago. Before I came out here at the village, I met quite a number of gay men here and talked with them and went hiking with them and things like that. Since that time, I've met very few. Mm. And I don't think that's because the kinds of people who come to the village have changed. I think that's because of the fear maybe involved in associating with someone who is out when you're not. I
Todd?
Yeah?
In general, how's it been at the village, and what are some things that we can do to improve conditions for gay and lesbian people here?
Here.
Well, maybe you can answer that on two levels, both in terms of someone, to make it easier for someone who is out, and also, for instance, just this winter, for people who are still in the closet this winter who are with us, what can we do to enable them to even live more comfortably in the closet?
As far as the environment here at the village, or I can only speak for the past year or so as a person who's been out, the village has been really very supportive, encouraging, and basically very warm and accepting. As far as improving that situation for a gay man or a lesbian who is out here, I think that will just require time and exposure. In that, the more openly gay and lesbian people that come through the village, the easier it will be for people after them. When Dan Spencer was here in the winter of 83-84 and was out, one of the things I remember him saying that I will probably never forget is that at the end of the winter he said, I would never, ever, ever be out here in the summer. I didn't have a chance to ask him to say more about that. But I think his being out here in the winter was a real positive first step. And if he had not been out here in the winter, I probably would not have either. It's my hope that having been here with Molly through a summer and being out, and being here through a winter and being out, and then doing a summer pretty much on my own as far as being an openly gay person, I would hope that would be encouraging for other openly gay and lesbian people to be here and to feel comfortable in speaking their stories and talking with people. And I think it will take that before the kind of comfort level is raised for openly gay and lesbian people here. As far as someone who is not out, that's a tough one. Everybody is on their own timeline as far as coming out. You can't force someone to come out before they're ready. It's a disaster if you do. I would think the most important thing would be to be accepting as a community of gay and lesbian people, overtly accepting. It feels like two different things to me, to be on paper accepting and to have had sessions that are accepting of openly gay and lesbian people, and to have had that experience in the community. That's one thing. To continue to be including gay men and lesbians, even when there aren't any around who are out, I think is really important, because that kind of environment, more than anything, I think, would encourage people to do some soul searching about maybe coming out here. I say that with a bias. My opinion is that it's not healthy to be in the closet, and I would do anything to encourage people to not stay there. I just feel like encouraging, being accepting and encouraging and making it comfortable for somebody who's in the closet to stay in the closet doesn't help anybody. Doesn't help the people involved, it doesn't help the community. Just as I would say that in just about any social situation, the more openly gay and lesbian people there are in the world, the easier it becomes for gay and lesbian people, as the society or the community at large starts working through the stereotypes that everybody grows up with, that gay men are interior decorators or hairdressers, and that lesbian women are truck drivers, and that's not really helpful. And it takes knowing gay and lesbian people personally, I think, to change that. Was that? Yeah.
This might sound like a dumb question. Have you always been gay?
Yeah.
Always? Done before?
Yeah. Okay. I should qualify that a little. Nobody knows what causes homosexuality. Nobody knows what causes heterosexuality. I don't know whether sexual orientation is genetic or whether it is something that is learned very early in life. I would suspect that it's a combination of both of those things. It's easy for me to look back and say, and remember and say, yes, I was aware of being different or of having a different orientation or of being attracted to different people than most of the folks around me. I was not conscious, say at age 4, I am a gay 4-year-old. not even at 12, 14. The concept of homosexuality didn't really exist for me. I think that's something else that all gay and lesbian people tend to go through. For a long time, you're sure you're the only one. The only one in the whole world that feels this way. Because, I think, probably because of the lack of openly gay and lesbian people around. If there had been somebody in Petersburg, Alaska, in the middle of nowhere, when I was 12, who was an openly gay man, that would have made an incredible difference to me. Just to have somebody who would be evidence to me, I'm going to make it, it's okay. I'm not crazy, I'm not losing my mind. I think I first realized that I was a gay man was when I was in college, when I was maybe 20, 21, and being able which was also at the time when I began to know openly gay and lesbian people. Several of my classmates in college were gay. A couple of the professors at the university I went to are gay, openly gay. I mean, they weren't making a big deal out of it, because I don't think that's necessary, but they were there. And to see them leading meaningful, fulfilling lives was wonderful. I think that gay people know on a fundamental level early on that they are not like everybody else. But I don't think it's until later that it's possible to assimilate that information and do something with it.
You mentioned earlier about before you were able to be open about it, conversations with people being draining and having to edit and things like that. Did you mean all conversations or conversations just dealing with sexual kinds of things?
Meaningful conversations. I would say all meaningful conversations. If you're not free to say how you feel, how you perceive the world, the people you're attracted to, that you know, that you like, that you want to get to know better. If you have, it comes down to, say in the business world, I can't go to these places too often, or I can't be seen with these people too often, or I might lose my job. I can't have this person over at, say after 7 in the evening more than maybe two or three times in a month, because the people who live around me are going to start talking. Wouldn't I get back to my apartment owner or whomever, and I'd potentially get kicked out of my apartment. So your life is really, really structured. It's a house of cards. It really is. Because if one person finds out, if the wrong one person finds out, it's all over. It's a real high stress way to live. Parents, especially, if you're trying to keep your sexuality a secret from your family, from your brothers or sisters, from your parents, it's really emotionally exhausting. Because you can't. The pressure, when I would go home, I didn't get this kind of over pressure from my parents, for which I am eternally grateful. Thank you, Mom and Dad. The pressure from relatives. Are you seeing any nice young women? When are you going to get married? I went up to Petersburg, where I grew up, in April for a visit. It was the first time I'd been there in about 8 years. And the first day I was there, this beautiful woman whom I love very much, named Esther Olsen, who was from the old country, from Norway, asked me if there were any promising young women in my life. And what to say? No, but I have a steady boyfriend. It just kind of stops everything right there. So it's choices, and it is exhausting. You have to be careful of your image. Can I go to this place? Can I wear this kind of clothing? Can I, all of those kinds of things, because people have it in their minds. Gay people wear that color, or
I would think that it would be far harder for a person who's not open about it to be here, because we think people watch people's lives out there. We all see each other's lives so intimately right here that it would be even harder, I would think.
Yeah. The winter of 82, when I was here and was not out and was still really struggling with what I wanted to do about my sexuality, was difficult. Gay people learn to speak without pronouns. Learn to talk about relationships without pronouns. My friend, or you start, inclusive language is really easy for gay and lesbian people who are still in the closet, because you don't do that in your ordinary speech. So it's you're accustomed to speaking in the second person, and you really should be speaking in the third, and speaking in plural when you mean singular, and things like that. Yeah, here it was difficult to be in the closet. I think by the end of the winter, or by the time I left in early 83, a lot of people suspected. But that was fine. Let them. I wasn't at a point in my life where I was able to say, this is my reality. Yeah.
Tasha talked about the way maybe some men would feel if they were seen with you or whatever, or with an openly gay person. How are the reactions from women when you are meeting women who don't know you well enough to know about your life as intimately, and might be worth a potential marriage or something, or dating or something? How does that come up? And do they maintain friendships?
That's one of the joys, I think, of being a gay man, is that I'm free to have intimate friendships with women. Because after that initial shock is worked through, there's no sexual tension in the relationship. It's wonderful. Mixed reactions from people who have been in the past attracted to me. And I tend to respond to them differently depending on who they are and what the what the situation is, one situation I can think of, a very close friend, when I came out to her, her first question was, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yeah, I'm sure." "Well, are you sure you're not bisexual?" "Yes, I'm sure." It's difficult. Coming out to people in general is difficult, no matter what the situation. Generally, as I said, I've had really positive responses from people having come out. All of the people who know me well know me as a gay man. A lot of people who don't know me well know me as a gay man. It's nice that way. I'm not exactly sure that I addressed your question.
Tosh, what do you think about bisexuality?
Well, I don't know. I'm not an authority on bisexuality, so I can't really speak to it. From the bisexual people that I know, I know that it's a very, very difficult place to be. Bisexuals tend to be snubbed both by the heterosexual and the homosexual community. It's almost, the feeling I get with them is that if you're not going to be straight, then at least be gay. It's our tendency, I think, to want to categorize people. It makes our worlds cleaner and easier to live in. Personally, I believe that bisexuality is as much of a gift, as much of a legitimate gift, as heterosexuality or homosexuality. The classic study, of course, is Kinsey, who did a number of surveys and things and came up with a 6-point scale, where one side of the scale was exclusively heterosexual, the other side of the scale was exclusively homosexual, and in between were various degrees, like 3.5 would be, say, a pure bisexual. The results of the surveys plotted out as a bell curve. Very few people on either extreme, and almost everybody out somewhere in the middle. I don't know about the moral dilemmas that bisexual people face. I'm thankful that I'm not having to face that in terms of engendering into sexual relationships. I don't know how that will all come out. That's really not for me to address.
I believe that too, that we're all in the gray area. But as far as how we play out that, our orientation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, sexuality is such a broader thing than what we do in bed. Mm. There are so many ways to be sexual with people without being genital with them. And I feel that almost all of our relationships involve some sexuality, because we are sexual beings, we are embodied people. I think the choice is how to express the sexuality in our relationships, not whether or not the relationship should be sexual. And that's something that if sexuality becomes a tension in a relationship, that's something that the people involved have to sit down and work out. That's been true with me in four, five instances, where the sexual tension in the relationship was causing a barrier in communication, in intimacy, in the quality of the relationship, the quality of the friendship. And it was very difficult, but it took sitting down with them and saying, look, this is really bugging me, and what are we going to do with this? Let's find a place where we are both free to express ourselves, and find channels where the intimacy of our relationship can be expressed, where we are both comfortable with it. And that's what it took. For bisexual people, I imagine the process is similar. It's just a question of the relationships and you know, the attraction or non-attraction between the people involved.
Got a long letter today from somebody who sent me some stuff about AIDS and Holy Communion distribution, all that kind of stuff. So this is in my mind. It was not anti, it was whatever that is. What's AIDS, if anything, doing to the gay community and all that response?
AIDS is doing a lot to a lot of people, both within and outside of the gay community. AIDS is not a gay person's disease, not at all. Last figure I read about a month ago is that 25% of all reported AIDS cases in the United States are non-homosexual people, 25%. AIDS at this point is a 100% fatality disease. They've isolated the virus which is associated with AIDS, the HTLV-3 virus, and there are a number of people working on antibodies and things. If there's one thing good, I think, that AIDS has done for the gay community, if there is such a thing, I'm using the term loosely, because gay people are every bit as diverse as non-gay people. It has made intimacy more important than sex, and I think that's great. As far as, it's easy to get carried away with data about AIDS. There were, when I talked to a woman who was here in May, there were 14 AIDS cases in Spokane. The number in Seattle, I think, is up near 100. It's incredible, the numbers involved. It's truly an epidemic. And it's sad that it's linked in so many people's minds to homosexuality, because that has a direct effect on the amount of money and time and energy spent on finding cures or preventive measures for it. As far as the dilemmas that are posed, for example, earlier in the summer, a report was requested of the board about what the village might want to be doing about AIDS here. As it turned out, things seemed to be fine and there was no special precautions that the village needed to be taking that weren't already being taken. I hadn't thought about communion. That's an interesting one. AIDS is again a two-sided issue, in that often, like homosexuality, people want to find out what causes it so that it won't happen anymore. People with AIDS, on the other hand, are extremely susceptible to disease, because it's, you know, for any of you who might not know, AIDS acquired immune deficiency syndrome. Basically, it lowers your ability to resist disease. And there are most of the most common cause of death among AIDS patients is pneumonia. Second most common is cancer. And so people who have AIDS have to be very careful as well about their health, about germs, probably a dish team orientation would take care of everything as far as cooking and living and being clean, you know, is concerned for anybody. But it's a matter of readjusting your life to accommodate potential, avoiding potentially hazardous situations. Like acquiring a new pet is not a good thing to do if you have AIDS, or moving to a new city or a new location, because there's germs everywhere. We couldn't live without them. I personally haven't had any experience with people who have AIDS. That's something I'm hoping to do in the future, as far as being part of a support network for people with AIDS. They need care, they need love, they need people to just be there and help them die. And there aren't many people who are able or willing to do that for a variety of reasons. Probably the most common one is that people don't want to be known associating with openly gay and lesbian people. The fear of contracting the disease for whatever reason.
How about a political question?
Sure.
I read in the paper last week that in a number of cities where maybe 2 and 3 years ago the support of the gay community was solicited and was welcomed in order to elect a candidate. And now, in all these places, it's like the kiss of death. Now, you would think with society becoming more accepting, it would be the other way around. Or is it the influence of the conservatives? Or what's your opinion on that?
My opinion is that there's emerging a strong, almost a dualism in our culture between those who are accepting and welcoming and affirming of gay and lesbian people and those who are excluding, condemning, and occasionally being downright hostile toward gay and lesbian people. I don't think that's the only issue where that's happening. South Africa, Central America, United States policy seems to be experiencing that same sort of dualism. I don't know if that's anything new. With the issue of homosexuality, I think it seems new because it's out. It's out in the open and people are talking about it and dealing with it, whether that's in a positive or a negative way as far as gay and lesbian people are concerned. It is still a criminal offense, a punishable offense, in I think 23 states in the United States. Very few cities even have anti-discrimination laws, anti-discrimination laws, which include up to police protection for gay and lesbian people. Very few cities have that. Just last year, for example, the city of Seattle passed a resolution affording gay and lesbian people police protection. We're talking basic human rights. In Texas, I think it was this spring, there was a measure put up for referendum, which was soundly defeated, which would have afforded gay and lesbian people civil rights, police protection, anti-discrimination in jobs and housing, in services rendered. It just takes time, patience, hopefully understanding, and a lot of work.
Article I read in the Washington Post on that issue said that AIDS was being used very effectively by demagogues in political situations.
Oh yeah.
And just, you know, the fear syndrome
Fear AIDS, children,
yeah.
Which is, you know, these things are really, really unfounded. The assaulting the family. I remember a cartoon that I saw in Seattle about 2 years ago. It was a little book. It was called The Tangerine Book, and it had little drawings of tangerines on the pages with captions. And I remember one very clearly. There was one tangerine down towards the bottom corner of the page, and it said, "An openly gay tangerine actively assaulting the family structure." It's reinforcing stereotypes that people hold about gay and lesbian people, which affords that kind of power in those hands. Gay people are, like I said, as diverse as everybody else. There are gay school teachers, there are gay Sunday school teachers, there are gay doctors and dentists and sure interior decorators and truck drivers and, you know, everybody. And we hold equally divergent political and social and theological views as the non-gay section of our planet.
Tosh, the only thing is AIDS is reversing the gains that gays have made. When they say that the virus has been isolated in teardrops and in saliva, no matter what you tell people, they're still going to think that you can get it by touching somebody's teardrops,
mm-hmm.
or the exchange of saliva.
Mm-hmm.
And they say it can't be, but why? They question, why couldn't it be? And the thing is, the virus, it takes 7 or 8 years incubation period?
I think like 5.
Yeah. People are scared to death of that. This could mm-hmm. multiply. It is multiplying. It's practically a plague.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they can't quarantine. When I was a kid, they used to quarantine people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a lifelong quarantine.
Yeah.
For measles or something, it was for a couple of weeks. So it is something that's going to get bigger and bigger.
Sure it is. Sure it is. And I think that
is hurting the cause of the disease. And
oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like I said, I think it's just fuel for the fire. But I don't think it's starting the fire. It comes down to, in my mind, it comes down to the tendency we have, like I said, to categorize people and to assign characteristics to them. People are often not willing to look carefully at data before they make a decision. I think that's true with AIDS. I feel very strongly that it's true with scripture, that people look at something and they say, okay, that's it, and their mind's made up. And it's very difficult to communicate once that kind of thing happens. I agree with you that that's happening. It's very definitely happening. I would add that I think the places where that is happening most, that is happening, I mean, the people who are most inclined to do that with AIDS are also inclined to do that in other areas, to make decisions mm-hmm. without carefully looking at the data mm-hmm. and without making decisions to inform their emotions, as opposed to making decisions based on emotion and finding data to support your emotion. I don't know what can be done as far as educating people and in all kinds of areas about homosexuality. It's a matter of people just being out and talking and saying, look, we're human beings. We are brothers and sisters with you.
Appreciate your sharing with us this year and getting to know you a year at a time. I think so many people out there too, all they do is read in the paper, you know, the bathhouses and things like this, and that's all they know.
Yeah.
And I think when you and Molly first had a session, I thought, oh dear, why did they do that? They just left themselves wide open for hurt. But then I realized I needed to face that too, and I have. And I've been more than grateful that you've been here to share with us and be open with us.
Most of the time I'm glad to do it.
Oh, I should think.
There are times when I'm really not. And there are times when I know this is something that I've talked to other gay and lesbian people about. There are times when you get into a rage. Having to defend publicly such a large portion of yourself. And who else has to do that? We are an invisible minority. Like I said, we pretty much look, talk, act, dress, work with everybody else. And unless we take the initiative and come out and say, okay, I'm going to do this, this is worth it, it doesn't happen. And the stereotypes are self-perpetuating. But like I said, most of the time I'm glad to do it. Thank you.
I have a personal question for you. How do you feel about kids? Did you ever want to have a kid? Or have you ever thought about that? Or?
Yeah, I have. There are gay and lesbian people with children. Mm-hmm. There are quite a number of them.
Or even adopt one or something, but just to have, you know, somebody.
My personal feeling is colored by my perception of reality. We are still at a point in our society where gay and lesbian people are being denied visitation rights to their own children. And being denied custody of their own children solely on the basis of their sexual orientation. So I look at that reality and I discount the possibility of having children. It's not a big issue for me. I'm not that crazy about having kids. That may change. I don't know. At this point, it's not a big issue for me. But I know that there are gay and lesbian people who have children who would like to have children at some point in the future, and it's very, very difficult for them. Unless, like I said, unless they remain totally in the closet, in which case I don't know how healthy an environment that would be. I would suspect, I would like to think, I would hope that that's changing. Just as single people wanting to be parents.
Same thing.
No, that's changing. It's slow, but it's coming around. It's possible. It's very difficult, but it's possible for a single person to adopt a child now. So I would hope that that trend would continue and that gay and lesbian people would be afforded equal status on that somehow, someday, both in as couples and as individuals. I know that statistically, it almost never happens that gay people raise gay children. In almost every case where gay people have had children, have raised them, the children have not been gay or have not been lesbian. Just, I mean, in the same vein, almost all gay and lesbian people had heterosexual parents. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's not an issue. You don't persuade someone to be gay. The only choice that I faced as a gay man, and the only choice that I've heard anyone say who has experienced it, is what to do with your sexuality, whether to affirm it or deny it. That's the only choice. It's not, we don't go recruiting in grade schools or things like that.
Yeah. mentioned to Jackie's question something about being your frustration with having to feel like you're defending yourself and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's hard to hear. I'm sorry if that is the case, but I understand that no doubt it is. But I was just wondering, do you feel like doing this is a chore for you and you're here to help us understand, or after you've been through an evening like this, do you feel a sense of freedom or uplifting or anything like that? Or is it good for you, or are you doing this because it helps us understand?
There's some of both. Some of both. I was talking with an openly gay man who was up here recently, Frank from Phoenix, about that. And I'm always encouraged when people come up to me after a session and say that really helped, or thank you for doing that, or I'm glad you did that. That helps. That's not, I don't think, my primary reason for doing it. There have been times in sessions where I find myself asking, you know, why am I doing this? Why am I sitting up here open to just anything? And I think part of my commitment to being out, to being open about my sexuality, is a commitment to trying to change things for other gay and lesbian people. And just as racism turned out to be not a problem of that people of color have, but a problem that people who are not of color have toward people of color, I feel the same way about heterosexism, that it's very easy to look at things, to see the really obvious things in the gay community and say, see all the things that are wrong with gay and lesbian people, they're sick, they're demented, all this stuff, all this going over, without looking at the causes for that kind of response. And so I think education is a really crucial role that openly gay and lesbian people have to fill, because that's the only thing that's going to change anything. Okay, what's that one question you've been dying to ask?
Yeah. It's kind of a fun question.
Sure.
If we could be in your place defending ourselves, what would be one question that you'd just be dying to ask, or several questions that you've been faced with that you thought, how could people ask such a thing? So if we were defending our heterosexuality, what would you ask?
I would ask why this is a big deal. I would ask, what is it that is so threatening about gay and lesbian people? And from there, I think I would launch into impossible rhetorical questions like, why is this happening? And why did God create us this way? And why has the last 800 years of church history been so opposed to the existence of gay and lesbian people? And questions that there are no easy answers for. It's not nearly as severe, but it's kind of like asking a black person why apartheid exists. The questions that come to mind are all why questions. Just basically big why. I think those are the kinds of questions I would ask. And there aren't easy answers for those any more than there are easy answers that I can give.
Bible-like class in college, and the prof, have you done much study on what's in the Bible with that? I know he mentioned a couple times the way that things were worded, and if you went back to the original translation, kind of gave evidence, you know, to that. Is there much of that that you've studied, or just a few incidences?
Well, I feel confident in saying that as we know it, Scripture says nothing about homosexual orientation. Nothing. Mm-hmm. Scripture has some things to say about relationships, about positive, supportive, caring, Christ-centered relationships and destructive relationships. And I am of the opinion that those are to be looked at and used and applied equally to homosexual and heterosexual relationships. I mean, there are destructive gay relationships, there are destructive straight relationships, there are very supportive, nurturing, caring relationships between people of the opposite sex, just as there are between people of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.